Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReynolds.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reynolds Show, we talk about restoring extension after ACL reconstruction surgery.
The Ask Mike Reynolds Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure you knew about my free online course on the Introduction to Performance Therapy and Training. If you want to learn how to get started optimizing and enhancing performance, this is the course for you. Head to MikeReynolds.com/performance to sign up today.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reynolds Show. I'm here with the crew from Champion PT and Performance, answering your questions. Anything you want to talk about, PT, sports performance, fitness, career advice, anything you want to talk about, head to MikeReynolds.com, click on that podcast link, and we will keep answering away. Let's see, who do we have today? We have Dave Tilley, Lisa Lowe, Mike Scaduto, Jonah Monlock, Lenny Macrina, Dewesh Podell, and Dan Pope, all from Champion. Good grouping of people today. Len, a couple new students for our podcast listeners. Who do we have today?
Yes, we have two brand new students that you'll see over the many months. We have Courtney Camborales from Dewville. We've had recent student from Dewville, and Courtney now is in her last rotation from Dewville up in Buffalo. And we have Nancy Kuhn, Nancy Kuhn, like there's a Q at the beginning, from Mary Baldwin University in Mary Baldwin, Virginia.
I like it. I feel like those intros are just getting better and better, Len. They're
made that up. I did that without a list. No list having to cheat.
That's awesome. All right. So who's up first? So both students started at the same time. So we don't have a seniority issue here. So let's see. Yeah, let's see who they've self-chosen to read the first question.
All right. So I'm gonna read the first one.
Power move.
Chris from England, what are some tips you would give for restoring full knee extension after ACL surgery? I see many patients around the 5-week mark that have a loss of motion that I would like to avoid.
I want to avoid those people too.
I like it, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, right? I mean, so nobody wants to have a loss of extension after ACL surgery, right? That's one of our primary goals that we always have after surgery, is making sure that we get that as soon as we can. So let's try this, Chris. I'll try to lead the discussion a little bit. Before we get into what we do exactly, I don't know, how often do you see people with loss of extension, 3, 4, 5 weeks out? I mean, is that a common thing? I mean, who wants to tackle that part of the question?
I would say it's uncommon, but unfortunate when it does happen. Like that's, I would say the majority of people, maybe it's our relationship with doctors and they send them early and we see them pre-op or we educate them pretty well. And we're like, as soon as you can possibly get your leg on a prop straight, please do. So I would say 75 to 80%, I would say across the clinic are pretty good. And then maybe you have the one who is sore or not the most compliant, or doc doesn't maybe feel comfortable with PT till really late and they get a little sticky.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the first things I thought of too, Dave, but when I read this question was that, perhaps if this person's seeing this recurring, maybe there's a consistency there, right? Because you're always going to have somebody, right? There's always going to be a patient that gets some tightness of their knee. That it just happens. It's the way things are. Everybody's a little different. But if you're seeing this recurring, then, I do wonder, is it a limitation too early from, the surgeon's perspective? Or are we not emphasizing that early enough? Is it maybe they need a pre-op session for that person, right? But I thought that was kind of interesting. Len, 5 weeks out, why is somebody Why is somebody typically tight 5 weeks out? What are some of the reasons?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, what Tilly said is there a system issue? Like, are they not being told in the hospital or, you know, after surgery what they need to do, meaning prop something up under their ankle and just begin to work on that passive extension, the weight of the leg just pushing down? If they're not told that, maybe they're going home and putting something under their knee as a position of comfort, you know, to create that little flexion in the knee, and then it just snowballs after that. Or if the protocol says don't stop PT for 1 or 2 weeks, and they're just sitting at home, so many different reasonings or, you know, potential issues that could occur. I seem to not have an issue. You know, I can't remember. It's just been a while. If they do begin to lose it a little, I am pretty aggressive with it in getting it back, meaning I am instructed and I'm really on the family, the parents, the kid, whoever it is, to get aggressive at home, meaning to begin working on extension at home, even more so than they're doing, because we're missing something. So at 5 weeks out, if they're losing extension, you know, I'm thinking there's a system issue. And then what's the limitation? Is it pain? That is, we get their pain controlled better. Is it a fear? And just get them more comfortable doing the whole thing. And maybe you get to work, you know, play your Jedi mind tricks and play your mind games with them a little. I think that's usually the case as well. There's just a lot of fear involved. Is it a dissection issue? Was the surgeon, is this one surgeon, they're aggressive in how they handle the knee and how they dissect tissue? Because I've seen certain surgeons, even that I get, the patients are in a lot more pain than other surgeons. Like, what is going on? It's the same surgery. It's the same exact thing. Like, what is going on? So I think there's so many different factors. I think you just need to recognize it and get aggressive early on with getting that hyperextension, prop the ankle up, maybe even a little ankle weight above their kneecap. I don't do prone hangs. I think that's well documented. And then go from there. But I'll let other people talk.
I like that though. Good stuff though, Len. I mean, you know, it's not always something biomechanically, for example, right? It's always not something like, oh, your kneecap's not moving, something like that.
Right.
I like the concept of pain and even just like fear. And the person not knowing, like, oh, am I supposed to get my knee straight? Right. Like sometimes it's like us in our golf swing, right? It's like, oh, that's where I'm supposed to put my hands. Right. Like sometimes the person just doesn't know. Right. But, all right. Who else wants to jump in? I want to talk a little bit more about like some strategies that we do with somebody that is tight. Obviously, I think that's important, but who wants to jump in? Dan, you got something?
I was going to say, I think that we often see knees that have had multiple surgeries. I think of like the past five patients I've had have had multiple ACLs, and sometimes it's on both sides too. So you don't even know what their normal actually is, you know, and you're kind of left guessing like, I don't know if this is, you know, stiff or this is actually your normal, because we don't have a good comparison on the other side. Sometimes the surgical side is better than the other side. So it becomes a little bit confusing. I think a little bit challenging from that perspective. So, you know, I think it's just good to keep in mind, what are the prior surgeries that this patient had in the past? And are you looking at normal range of motion, right? Just by looking at the other side. So.
Yeah. That's a really good point too. And the more complicated of the procedure, the more, other surgical procedures that they do at the same time, meniscus, cartilage, those sorts of things, other ligaments, you're definitely going to have that. So good point. I don't know who else wants to jump in here. Mike, Lisa, anybody, like what do you do now? So somebody's tight. Right. What are some things Lenny talked about and Dave talked about a little bit here? Just getting them, like, let's just teach them. Hey, you got to get your leg straight more often throughout the day. What other things do you do when you have somebody with a loss of knee extension? Mike, you want to start?
Yeah, I would say the big things postoperatively is we really want to control and monitor swelling. So I'm definitely doing circumference measurements. I'm doing the sweep test every time they come in. I'm looking for changes in swelling and how that's impacting their range of motion. Especially as they're getting up to, you know, do more walking around the house, sometimes people will start to get a little more swollen. So I'm really monitoring swelling, then doing techniques to try and help with some swelling. And I should kind of clarify, also looking at joint effusion with the sweep test, swelling within the joint. Then from there, you know, as Lenny mentioned, kind of like a low load, long duration stretch into knee extension with the heel propped up, maybe adding an ankle weight above the patella. Working on patellar mobs, superior and inferior direction, and then starting to work on some active knee extension in the like long sitting position first, trying to get some quad control.
I like that. I like that. I like the, you know, two big things that I really liked about that. One was the swelling control concept, right? Because, you know, it, oftentimes maybe something's going on. Maybe they're doing too much around the house. Maybe they're not doing their exercises like they're supposed to, whatever it may be. If they're constantly struggling with their swelling going up and down for whatever reason, either within or outside of their control, then yeah, that's going to have a dramatic impact on their range of motion. So, you know, that should be a big priority. I like that. But I like what you just said there at the end, though, the active quad control. And I think that's sometimes something that we miss, right? It's not always just a passive loss of motion. I mean, we also have to get that quadriceps to fire, to get that patellar to fire, to get to move, to get that patellar tendon to feel some tension, and to get the tibiofemoral joint to glide, right? So I think that's a good point that I think not a lot of people understand. Is it's not just, oh, what stretch do I need to do or what mobility do I need to do? Sometimes it's also just getting them going, right? Lisa, what else? Anything else you do different, or anything else you want to add to that mix? That was a lot.
That was a lot of things. I feel like I'm usually just substitute teacher for ACL people, which is fun. I get to kind of peek in on whatever like part people are on. But I will say, I got to hang with one of Lenny's ACLs last week when he was on vacation, and he came in and was like super pumped to like tell me how much time he'd spent hanging an extension. So it was like very, very telling. Very telling of like this hammer at home. Like, it is your job when you are at home to do these things. It was like the first thing he was very excited to tell me. He was like, I think my extension's better. Like, I spent the first time. And even like, he had an early morning appointment and he already hung out an extension for a while, like before he came into PT.
So studying for the test. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I will say,
if I may, great, great point, Lisa, that he was pumped that he did it. There is a world out there, believe it or not, for the listeners, that some surgeons, even PTs, are afraid and say it's bad to get hyperextension. And I would just want to reiterate that it's not bad to get hyperextension. When we say hyperextension, that term, I get yelled at on social media if using the term hyperextension. People will just say it's extension. It's extension beyond zero. To match the other knee. So
wait, what are we yelling about that now? That's something else.
Well, I have gyms that have like 15 degrees of hyperextension.
Then the question is, how often, right? Like, how much hyperextension do you get? Do you return all of that hyperextension? Because as Dan said, a lot of people have had numerous surgeries on their knees, so you don't know what normal is for that person. If you do know what normal is, the goal is to eventually get symmetrical hyperextension in both of their knees, but not immediately. So if they have 10 degrees of hyperextension on their non-surgical knee, and that's their normal, I'd probably get 3 or 4 or 5 at the most kind of early on and kind of hover there, and then let the motion come naturally after that. I don't want to get 10 immediately, because then that 10 becomes 15 as they start doing functional stuff. Now they have a stretched out graft. So you got to be careful. So I would say in the hyperlax person, don't be too aggressive with their extension. It's going to come back. It's going to come back. And the person that has that 3 degrees of hyperextension, I would try to get it pretty quickly, maybe to zero. And those last few degrees will eventually come. But you can really keep an eye on that, because it will kind of drift back into a flexion contraction. So that tight person. So the difference is in the loose versus the tight person.
No PCL infield.
Nobody watches the videos, so I can do whatever.
Dave, how does one of your athletes with 20 degrees past extension, I don't want to trigger anybody
right, and
say
exactly.
Hyperextension. Sorry, but that sounds terrible, by the way. 20 degrees of extension. How do they feel if they only have 5 degrees past extension? How does that person feel?
The knee doesn't feel right. They walk with a limp. Their quads don't come back. If that's long-term, I'm talking like you're now 8 months out and you intentionally got them to zero and stopped because the dog said, don't go beyond zero. Or you read something that said, don't go beyond zero. They don't feel right. They don't walk right. Their quads don't feel right. It just doesn't feel right to them.
A lot of gymnastics too needs like a very straight legged bound. Like, think about just doing like pogo hops in place. So just stand up where you are and bend one knee 10 degrees and then hop in place.
And try to do that. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. And there are studies that show if you get the hyperextension back, it does not affect outcomes. So Don Shelbourne out of Indianapolis has shown that. So if you get the hyperextension back and get symmetry, that's a huge indicator of a positive outcome. Like, they're going to do better than not getting the hyperextension back. They actually get OA in their knee more more likely or quicker than not getting hyperextension back. So you got to get it back. In conclusion,
let's mix it up. I want to get one more perspective from the strength coaches just quickly here. So somebody that is 4, 5, 6 months after ACL reconstruction, or heck, we even see people years out, right? That they had it a few years ago, didn't even realize they didn't have it all back. Tell me a little bit about the importance of that for you, because obviously Dave just brought up a really good point, right? If you're trying to do athletic movements and you don't have full hyperextension, if you don't have the ability to lock out your knee, right, that's going to impact, you know, triple extension. That's going to impact your ability to produce power. So tell me a little bit from the strength coach perspective of why that's a detriment and why that you see that cause problems in people in the gym. Who wants to start? Dewey, you want to start?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's as simple, like you said, it affects triple extension and all of our power producing activities. So it's going to limit jumping, it's going to limit sprinting, it's going to limit aspects of cutting and changing direction and stuff. So, you know, and we tend to, when they get back into training, let's say in a gym setting, and you do all these activities with suboptimal levels of, you know, full hyperextension or extension, we'll call it, so we don't get in trouble. But if we do repetitive motions with not full extension on one side, but then extension on the other side, then we're going to have funky mechanics for a long, long time. And then it's obviously going to impact the outcomes and the outputs of sprinting, jumping, you know, any explosive movement. So yeah, it'll for sure come up, and we've seen it.
Yeah, for sure. Jonah, from your perspective, what, you know, how does somebody, you know, you have somebody down the road that doesn't quite have that. What are some of the things that you're going to see with them just trying to get through their training programs and their workouts? Can they get strong? Can they get powerful? What do you see?
I would say a lot of just the kind of achiness and stuff that Lenny was talking about, that they, like, for the people who are way longer out, where they end up just not feeling as good when they're doing stuff, which makes it that much harder to push everything. And it can end up being something that's just kind of constantly on their mind. Similar, but we see it a lot with Tommy John guys who don't get full extension back in their elbow, where everything they do, they're like, oh, I can't go all the way down on a pull up or something like that, or whatever it is, they, for a breathing drill or hang anything, they're setting up slightly offset because one of their elbows doesn't fully extend, and it's on their mind for absolutely everything they do. Which I imagine is even that much worse when it's an ACL and it's your legs, because you're feet are in contact with the ground on everything. So I think it just mentally is challenging as well.
Yeah, makes sense. So awesome. So good stuff. Hopefully that helps, Chris. You know, we're big believers in making sure that they get this back right away. So that's your first step, is to, you know, work on this week one, make sure, or week zero. I don't know what we're supposed to call anything anymore. So, but like make sure you're working on this stuff right away, so that way you don't have any of these issues going forward, because there's going to be some repercussions. So great question. Thanks so much. If you have a question like that, head to mikerinal.com, click on that podcast link, and be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to us, to rate, review, and subscribe us. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks so much. See you in the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to mikerinal.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at mikerinal.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.